And all participants, this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the IRTPC training call on the 29th of November, 2011. On the call today, we have James Liddell, Walter Greiman, Mike O'Connor, Rob Villeneuve, Av Vidoria, Philip Corwin, Barbara Steele, and Michele Nalen. From staff, we have Marika Koenigs and myself, Natalie Perrin. I would like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you.
Thank you, Natalie, and everyone, welcome to this special session for IRTPC, where we will discuss an overview of the training, the transfer process. I think that some folks expressed in some of our earlier calls it would be beneficial to help some of the newcomers who were not on IRTPA or IRTPB or who don't deal with transfers on a daily basis to get some familiarity with the process, especially some of the terminology that we'll be discussing in IRTPC. I volunteered to lead this training and put some slides together, but I'm sure that there are other registrars on the call, and they will throw rocks at me if I say something that isn't true or is, if I gloss over something that's a little more complicated than I lead it to believe. So I'm very grateful that there are other folks that will participate as well and keep me honest. The only question or the request that I would have is if we can go through each slide and then I'll allow some time after each slide to address any questions that folks might have, and that way it'll keep it from getting too quiet or too too raucous of a session, and we'll keep it somewhat orderly by slide transition. So if there are no objections, I will dive right into the overview of GTLD transfers through the inter-registrar transfer process, IRTP. Okay, so this first slide provides some background on what the purpose of the IRTP is. It was developed as a critical component to supporting a competitive marketplace for domain name registration. It allows registrants, who are not happy with their registrar to take their business somewhere else. If you recall, prior to ICANN and the competitive registrar environment, this was not possible. There was one and only one registrar to handle these types of issues. So it was important that this process exist to facilitate the competition between registrars. It is a standardized process that all registrars, despite their different business models, despite their target markets and how they may operate, whether it's fax, web, email, or whether it's a law firm, that acts as a registrar, whether it's a reseller or retail, all of those things have to kind of coalesce around a standardized process in order for transfers to work. And as we touched in our charter discussion today, it is also sometimes used in conjunction with a change of control, so not just a registrant taking their business to a new registrar, but also taking their transacting in the domain name and transferring control of that registration to another party. Any questions on this slide, or is this a fairly comprehensive overview, or have I left anything out? Okay, MTQ. Moving on. Here's some definitions and acronyms that we need to, and sorry for the formatting here. But here's some acronyms and this the what we call the ICANN decoder ring. So getting an echo now. Sorry, can someone address the echo? Natalie?
Oh, this is Natalie. I'm just talking to the operator.
Hello? Yeah, can we ask that folks mute their phones or their speakers or their computer or both, because I'm getting a very, very bad echo.
It isn't Rick. I see Manetta has just joined a call, so maybe she can mute because she might be causing the echo, I guess.
Why did it not echo for Marika, but only for me?
Yeah, she is disconnected now, and I think the echo is gone, so I guess she's trying to redial.
Yes, it is gone. Okay, so I'll continue. Sorry, that was very, very annoying, because it was not just an echo, but it was like a very, very delayed and loud echo, so at least it was on my end. So just diving into the second slide here, where we present all the acronyms used in this transfer process, the first one being the name of the transfer process itself, IRTP, and I think it's important we note inter-registrar transfer policy, also known as transfers. Now, I point that out because registrars, including GoDaddy and possibly some others, will have an internal transfer process as well, where registrars can take a domain name from one particular account or one entity and reassign it internally where it doesn't leave that particular registrar. Those things are fine, and those are, I guess you would say those are private product and service offerings that are offered by those registrars and do not fall under the guise of ICANN's policy. ICANN's policy specifically governs the interactions that registrars have with each other and with the registry. I like to tell folks that registrars do not have a desire to play nicely together, and that's what this policy requires. That goes back. Okay. And it's gone now, so hopefully Sunetta is back on the line and she can hear us. The next one is a transfer contact. Now, this is the individual listed in WHOIS that is authorized to approve the transfer. And the important note here is that either the registrant or the admin contact listed in WHOIS can be considered the transfer contact. New registrar, that's the registrar that is will be receiving the transfer. And the current registrar, also called the registrar of record or the losing registrar, will be the registrar that is giving up the domain name for the transfer. So if you want to think of it as source and destination or sender and recipient, however you want to consider those terms. But I think that we say gaining registrar and losing registrar would probably be the most common, although I believe the policy refers to it as gaining registrar and registrar of record. FOA, you heard this acronym thrown around in our previous call. It's a form of authorization. This is an electronic or paper confirmation of the transfer by the transfer contact. So the gaining registrar asked to go to the transfer contact and get their approval or their authorization for the transfer, and that is called the FOA. And auth info, or auth info code. This is a unique code. You can consider it like a key or a password for a domain name. It's usually a very long alphanumeric string that is assigned to each domain name. It is unique, and it must be provided correctly to the registry when the transfer request is submitted. So any questions on those acronyms, or is there an important one missing from this list? Okay, moving on. So I'm going to show you some animations here that outline what we would consider a pristine transfer. This is a transfer where everything goes exactly according to plan. And then later on in the session, we'll discuss all the different ways it can go wrong or fail, or there can be some exception cases. But let's just look at how a pristine transfer would work. The first step is that the registrant would initiate the transfer at its new registrar. So You know, if I'm unhappy with my current registrar and I want to set up an account with GoDaddy, I would create the account there and say, GoDaddy, I want you to become my new registrar. The new registrar then sends back instructions. Specifically, the new registrar would say you need to go to your existing registrar and unlock the domain name and request your auth info code. Yes, McKelly. Lots of folks would have a variety of motivations for transferring a domain name. I keep using that as an example, but you're correct. Maybe they want to save money. Maybe they wanted to be in a different jurisdiction. So that this initial step here, the registrant has to initiate the process, and I think the important bit here is that the new registrar, the gaining registrar. Okay. Now it gets a little more complicated. The new registrar then performs a WHOIS lookup on the domain name, and it's looking for those contacts that it can essentially get the transfer contact that we discussed. The registry, or possibly in a FIN registry, it would be the other registrar, would provide the contact information for the registrant and the transfer contact, or some subset thereof of the contact information. But basically, the new registrar has to figure out who is the transfer contact, who is authorized to approve this transfer. The next step is that the registrar, and we're assuming it's the same person who requested it, because this is a pristine transfer, sends the form of authorization to the transfer contact and says, you know, essentially you need to approve that this transfer has been requested on this domain name. You are listed as the admin contact or the registrant. Please approve this transfer. So how's that step look for everybody? Is that okay, or is that clear? Basically, the new registrar has to figure out who the authorized contact is and send them an FOA. McKelly.
Just by way of clarification, if it's a thick registry, they should be able to use the domain info command or something, shouldn't they? To get it.
Can you do a domain info command on a name that you are not the sponsoring registrar for?
Yes. If you have a valid EPP key, I think you can.
Okay. So that's another option. And there could also be an arrow going from new registrar to current registrar for that transaction as well on a FIN registry. Anyway, I think the key thing here is that the registrar has to figure out who the responsible party is to approve this transfer, and then send them the FOA. Okay, the next step is, and this can happen concurrently with the previous step, is that the registrant has to go to their current registrar account and unlock the domain name and request the auth info code. Now, it's important to note that in the transfer policy, the authorization info code cannot be reasonably denied. So the current registrar can't say, yes, we will give you that code at the end of your registration period, or we'll give it to you if you come fly to our offices and give us a pint of blood or something. You know, they can't be put unreasonable requirements in place. They can put reasonable requirements in place, like enter this password or confirm this with your account on file or something. But I think that there's some restrictions in there about, the controls for this have to be easy to find and relatively straightforward. So once the auth info code is then returned, the registrant has the auth info code. They provide the auth info code and the confirmed FOA, whether that's a paper FOA, a fax, or an electronic form, and they send all of this back to the new registrar. So now the new registrar has an unlocked domain name, a authorized FOA, form of authorization, and it has the auth info code for the domain name. The next step is that it essentially sends, since it has all the required pieces, it sends the command, the transfer command, to the registry and says, I have everything in order, everything looks legit, please transfer this domain name to to me. Are we okay with that slide? Okay. Now, the first thing that happens is the registry checks all of the information that the new registrar has provided to it and essentially makes sure that the code is valid and that the domain name is unlocked. And what it does then is sends out a notice to both registrars that there is now a transfer pending on this domain name. So example.tld is now marked as transfer pending. The losing registrar may, at this point, send a FOA to the transfer contact. Hey, just wanted to let you know that your domain name has been marked as transfer pending. Wanted to give you an opportunity to authorize that with me. The important thing is the transfer can't be held up on account of this step being done or not being done. The new recommendation from transfer IRTPB will modify this and will require this to go out to the from the losing registrar to the transfer contact. But once again, this is not a dependent step. The transfer cannot be delayed or stopped dependent upon this happening. So it's more of a notification step, I think, or a courtesy from the current registrar to the registrant. And it could be, you know, could thwart a hijacking attempt if up until this point the registrant was unaware that this transfer was underway. Now, the important thing here is in the third bullet point that this now starts a five-day calendar day clock ticking. And if there are no objections or no other formal denials are issued, then the transfer will take place at the end of the five-day period. Any questions? McKelly, go ahead.
Just for people who are new to the entire IRTP thing, with respect to the second bullet point there, at the moment, that losing registrar FOA is optional. Once the IRTP Part B recommendations come into force, then it becomes obligatory.
Right, and I tried to reflect that, although clumsily, I think in the may, which is how it currently is, and the must is how it will be here shortly when IRTPB is...
Yeah, and I just, it's just because, it just so that people understand, I mean, of the, I suppose the only thing just to say is that, you know, because we went through various things in the previous working group, the actual policy is changing. So, you know, there was something to come out at the far end. It wasn't just a lot of paperwork and phone calls.
Right, right. Jonathan?
Yeah, and could I, for a little bit more clarification on that, so when is that going to... When is that going to be implemented, the making it required?
If I'm, and boy, we just lost Marika, but I think we're very close here to hammering out some final implementation language, and then there will be a formal announcement from ICANN. But, I mean, it has gone through the council and the board and been accepted there, so we're just hammering out the implementation timeline now.
So, and then, so what impact is that going to have then as far as, so then the losing registrar will be required to send this FOA and get some kind of confirmation from the customer, some kind of verification that, you know, that they are who they say they are and that they approve the transfer. What's the time frame on that then, and how does that impact the current process?
Well, the way we're currently doing it now, I think FOA is a bit of a misnomer. It really is just a notification.
Okay.
McKelly, you know, help me on this, but I don't think that there is any time frame. I don't think that if the registrar is the registrant is silent or does not respond, I don't think that that means anything, or if it takes them a day or 10 days. The current registrar cannot stop the transfer from happening based on this not being done.
Right.
So they have to send it out, but they don't necessarily, the transfer process is not dependent on a response.
Okay, and then, and even once the changes are implemented, then it's going to be the same thing. It's just we're going to be required as the registrar to send the notice as part of the process, but that's it, just sending the notice to whatever the current contact information that we have on file. I mean, is it that kind of thing?
Yeah.
James, might I step in?
Okay, well, I had Barbara in the queue first, McKelly.
Okay.
So, Barbara, can you go ahead?
This is Barbara. I'm happy if McKelly wants to go first.
Okay, thanks,
Barbara.
Go for it, Michaela.
No, just to answer Jonathan's thing, as James was saying, all you're being asked to do is to send the FOA. You're not asked to do anything beyond that. So if you send the FOA and the recipient of the FOA ignores it, nothing happens. You know, nothing changes. The domain will transfer. But like, you guys control at least three registrars that I know of, and I know one of them already sends this FOA to registrants, and a lot of registrars would actually use it as a kind of a, hey, are you sure you want to leave us type of thing in the message that goes into it at the same time. Like, they have the obligatory FOA, which you have to have as per ICANN policy, but you also have something kind of informative saying, you know, you don't need to transfer your domain away if you just want to change the name servers, that kind of thing.
Right, okay. Well, that's definitely helpful. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan and McKelly. Barbara, go ahead.
Hi, this is Barbara. So just to kind of, you know, further put a spin on it, and they're exactly right. I mean, to the extent that, you know, the FOA goes out, the confirmation FOA from the losing registrar goes out to the registrant, you know, would have to respond to that and let the losing registrar know within the five-day transfer grace period that they do not want it to transfer. And if they fail to do that, if they are just silent and fail to do that, then the transfer will proceed, you know, on that after the five-day transfer grace period. So, and that just happens systematically unless the losing registrar sends the denial of transfer or NAC command through. So hopefully that helps a little bit more as well.
Yeah, it does, and it raises another question, but I'll hold that, and then maybe I'll ask you that question either offline or later in the process, Barbara. Okay, so that's kind of the second to the last step here, in that everyone is notified that this is happening, and that registrar of record, the current registrar, notifies the registrant that the transfer is taking place, and then starts the five-day clock. Phil, I see your question in the chat, and that is a slide here coming up in just a couple of moments here, so hopefully we'll cover that then, but if we don't, please raise your hand, if we leave that out, if we fail to address your question. Okay, so here's some exception cases, things that can happen or go wrong or how the process can fail. If the registrant does not accept the FOA, or if they cannot provide the auth info to the new registrar, then the new registrar cannot request the transfer. They cannot send the transfer request to the registry without those pieces of information in hand. If the name is locked or the auth info code fails, it doesn't match what the registry has on file, then the registry will reject the transfer. And again, during that five-day period, the losing registrar can reject or NAC, which is not acknowledge, the transfer. But their NAC must be associated with one of the acceptable reasons for denial that's spelled out in the current IRTP policy. Let's take a closer look at that in another slide here where we lay out the reasons for denial. There's another possible exception case where the registrant and the admin contact disagree. Remember that both of them are authorized transfer contacts, so it's possible that one, for example, the register, the admin contact, could start the transfer process, but the FOA would then be sent to the registrant, who would then reject the transfer. Now, what happens if those two individuals or entities disagree on whether or not the transfer should take place? In that respect, the policy says that the registrant's FOA overrides the admin contact. So any questions on this slide? Okay. So here's some reasons for denial. And like previous slide, these are also being modified slightly by IRTPB. So once IRTPB is in place, it will change these slightly. So I'm giving you kind of a snapshot of the reasons for denial as they stand today. The first one is, and this is when the current registrar or registrar of records can stop the transfer from happening. One is if there's evidence of fraud. Two is if there's a current pending UDRP action on the domain name. Three is if they're currently under court order not to transfer the domain name by a court that's, I think that they say a court of competent jurisdiction or some other term of art that refers to a court that applies to this particular name and this particular registrar. If there is a reasonable dispute over the identity of the transfer contact, so we're not clear that the person who authorized the transfer is the person who is who they say they are or they're portraying themselves to be. Non-payment for a previous registration period, and I think it's previous is bolded here because we can't stop a transfer from happening for a current or future registration period. And by the way, number five includes credit card chargebacks as well. I think that's specifically cited as an example in the policy. Number six is express written objection from the transfer contact, which essentially says that I am the authorized transfer contact and I expressly forbid you to transfer this name as part of a transfer protection service or hijacking, guard service. Think of this, as possibly as an anti-FOA. So this is I authorize you to stop all transfers from taking place. If the domain name was already locked. Now, again, this is the, that the name is locked at the registry and the registrar, and there's some clarifications coming out for IRTVB. If the transfer was requested within 60 days of the original creation of the domain name, and the final one is if the transfer was requested within 60 days of a previous transfer. Now, wait a second here. Go back here. So, a couple of things here. First of all, the lock and the unlock function cannot be hidden or, you can't be required to answer trivia questions or pay to unlock a domain name. This is there's some guidelines here about what registrars can and can't do, relative to making sure that the registrants had access to the locks on their domain names. Yes, thank you, Volker, for clarifying. And I'm going to ask you to raise your hand at the end of this slide and please state that for item number five. I wanted to point out also that reason for denial number eight and reason for denial number nine are reasons that registrars can reject a transfer but are not required to reject a transfer. This is something that we wanted to discuss in IRTPB, but we were unable to reach a consensus on that. So it is, however, kind of a common practice that if a domain name was registered on Monday, that you can't then transfer it on Friday. Or if a domain name is transferred, you can't then turn around and transfer it again right away. Those are options that are available to registries and registrars, but they are not universally required. So that's those items there. I see that we have Volker wants to comment on item number five, and then Barbara's also in the queue. So, Volker, go ahead.
Yeah, I just checked with the transfer policy, and current registration may be a reason for denial as well, if the current if the domain register expiration has not yet occurred, and the current registration period is unpaid, then the transfer may be denied as well. But to clarify that further, the non-payment alone is not sufficient for denial. The domain must also be put on register hold by the registrar prior to the denial of transfer.
Right. Okay, thank you. So those two important points in Volker's comment there is that the current registration, really there is only two, right? There's a current and future or something, because if it goes past the expiration date, it becomes a past registration period. So I think that makes sense. If the registration has not yet expired, then non-payment to the current registration period is acceptable. The other part is that it's not just enough just to deny transfers. The current registrar must also engage a registrar lock for non-payment. Okay, Volker, your hand's still raised. Did you want to add to that, or is that
No, I just forgot to take it down.
Okay. Fair enough. Thanks. Barbara, go ahead.
Hi, James. Thank you. It's Barbara. I also just wanted to kind of make a general statement on behalf of VeriSign, and I believe that it may work this way at other registries as well, but when the original shared registration system was designed, there was actually a systematic restriction on transfers within the first 60 days after the creation date. So for any of the domains that are currently managed by VeriSign, our systems will actually not even allow, it will also basically reject or error out a transfer that's requested for reason number 8. So that's not something that registrars, at least in our systems, would have to specifically say, no, I'm going to knack it. Our systems automatically do that on behalf of the registrars. So when the changes in 2004 came into place and the IRTP became a consensus policy, the transfer was requested within 60 days of a previous transfer or a previous transfer. That was actually a new addition, and we opted, and I think the other registries also opted, not to put a systematic restriction in place there and just, you know, allow the registrars to have the option of denying the transfer or enacting the transfer. So, like I said, I'm not sure how all of the other registries operate, but I think most of them actually also provide a systematic restriction for number 8.
Thanks, Barbara. It's good to know that registries will just automatically block number 8, but we'll leave it to registrar discretion for number 9. And I can tell you that, representing GoDaddy, that we will always knack a transfer, I think, if it comes within 60 days of a previous transfer, because we believe that's an important security step to prevent what we would call registrar hopping of domain names. So we like to make sure that that's not allowed. Any other questions or comments about these reasons for denial? Okay. Next slide here touches on disputes. I'm sure I'm going to miss a lot of things here, and I'm going to lean on Barbara and Volker and McKelly to help me flesh out this slide. But, you know, taking a look at disputes here, there are a number, let's think of them as kind of a spectrum of options that folks have for disputing a transfer. In escalating time and cost. So the first step is that any discussion between registrant and admin contact can resolve a conflicting FOA. Remember, we said that the registrant's FOA trumps the admin contact FOA. So I think the first step is making sure that those two entities are on the same page relative to a transfer. The second one is if there's any kind of a dispute over the legitimacy of a transfer, the losing registrar and gaining registrar can discuss this and can work with the parties involved to resolve or reverse the transfer. And I think that in cases of suspected hijacking, this is the fastest remedy available. This is one of the reasons why we really want registrars to communicate with each other and why IRTPD requires there to be a transfer action channel that can respond on very short notice to emergencies. The next one is a more formal process called the Transfer Dispute Resolution Policy, TDRP, which is spelled out in the IRTP. Based on our discussions in the previous working group, IRTPB, and discussion with Barbara and some of the other registries, we find that this is a seldom used policy. It is very slow. I think that we heard somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 months to get these results, so not necessarily a good remedy in cases of what we would consider fraud or theft or hijacking, but possibly an option available for a genuine dispute between two parties. And, you know, of course, their courts are always open for individuals to take these issues. Okay, and Barbara, can I ask you to clarify? I didn't want to include RFE here because I thought that was specific to VeriSign, but can you expand on what the request for enforcement looks like?
Sure. I mean, basically, this is Barbara. The way it's structured is the transfer dispute resolution policy allows those registrars that aren't able to resolve a dispute between themselves, which the policy does encourage, to file a dispute either at a first or a second level dispute resolution provider. And all registry operators are designated as the level one or first level dispute resolution provider. And to the extent that there is a dispute, then the registrar that claims that either a transfer has occurred in violation of the policy or it's being denied in violation of the policy can file a request for enforcement. And that is consistent across all registries, and that's specifically called out in the transfer dispute resolution policy. And then the registry operator, once they receive that, the other registrar would have an option or the opportunity, I should say, to respond to that within 7 days. Transfer dispute resolution policy, or the TDRP, specifically outlines the time frame and the windows that all actions should take. And I'm trying to think that the longest it should take, I think, is something like 105 days, unless there is a dispute over the accuracy of the who is. And then it can be deferred over to ICANN for clarification on that. So there are some instances when it could take longer than that, but the way that the policy is written is it should occur within, you know, a very specific and finite period of time. Again, the second level, the registrars would have the option, if they chose not to go to the registry operator, they could bypass the registry operator as the first level dispute resolution provider and go to the second level dispute resolution provider, which there are, I believe, 3 to 5 different entities that have been designated by ICANN as being authorized to handle transfer-related disputes. And so to the extent that a registrar goes to a second level, then they could not appeal it to the registry operator, but they could appeal it to the courts if they didn't like the decision. If they opt to go to the registry operator first, then they didn't like the answer that the registry operator gave them in response to the dispute, they could appeal it to the second level or to the court. So it's a lot of information, so I'm trying to boil it down into the nutshell. Hopefully that helped to put a little bit more color around it without confusing everyone too much.
I thanks, Barbara, and I knew I wasn't doing that bullet point justice. the TDRP is its own policy, and I think that it has, as you mentioned, a very complex process as well.
The part that you were thinking about that maybe VeriSign only is what we call the ARS, which is the Application for Reinstatement of Sponsorship, and that's something that VeriSign has put in place to the extent that the registrars are able to work it out amongst themselves, but they don't have a mechanism by which to transfer the domain name back. Then we have a form that's available on our submission, transfer dispute submission area of our website, that basically will allow the losing registrar to file this, what's called an ARS, and like I said, it's VeriSign specific. And to the extent that the gaining registrar responds to that and concurs that the domain name was transferred inappropriately, then they can agree to it within a 7-day period, and we will go ahead and effect the transfer back.
That's basically the mechanism for the previous bullet point. If the losing and gaining registrar agree, then they can use the ARS as the mechanism to reinstate or reverse the transfer.
Right. That would be at VeriSign only, like VeriSign-managed TLDs. I don't believe the other registries currently offer that, but maybe some of the registrars who have had some experience with transfer disputes with them may be able to speak to it.
Okay, thanks. So I think that the takeaway here, I mean, is that TDRP is very complex, very slow, might likely be less complicated or less or faster than court action, perhaps, but it's certainly not something you would want to engage in an emergency situation where you're measuring damages by hours. So, you know, And again, I think that it's important that registrars are familiar with the intricacies of the TDRP, but the registrant would simply call their registrar and say, look, I didn't authorize this transfer. Please help me get it back. And so I think it's more of these mechanisms or avenues that the registrar would follow to try and escalate the dispute over the transfer. So any other questions or comments about these bullets here? I think we're getting close to the end here. That might have even been the last slide. Let me see if there's anything left. Yeah, so that is the last slide. So is there anything that's any follow-up questions or any slides that someone would like me to go back to? We have probably about 10 more minutes here. If there's anyone that would like to see some of those animations again one more time or any other items, all of this, including the MP3 and the recording, will be posted to the list, though, so that staff will make that available to everyone. McKelly, go ahead.
Well, I'd just like to say that, you know, that you did such a good job. And if you ever lose your job at GoDaddy, you could always move into the training sector, James.
Well, I would need Barbara and you to ride shotgun on that, McKelly, but thanks. And Volker. No, but
jokes aside, I mean, the thing is this, and I've said it to other people as well. I said it to them in Dakar, and I'll say it again. I mean, if there's anything about any of this that people don't understand and they don't want to post it to the main list, I mean, you know, just ping one of us off list or whatever. I mean, either myself, yourself, Volker, whoever you're happy, you know, pinging, if there's something you're not sure about.
Right.
I mean, or just ask it on the main list. I mean, there's, you know, it's acronym soup, and there's lots of the acronyms. And, you know, sometimes it's because you might think, well, why isn't it done this way? And the answer is, well, because nobody ever thought of doing it that way. Or is there a policy about X? Well, maybe there isn't.
Yeah. And some of these things, I think, is a good point, McKelly, is there's policies and then there's absence of policy where practice and, you know, just kind of some industry conventions have stepped in to kind of fill those gaps. I think that this is a complex issue, and it is very important, not only for the aftermarket, as we discussed earlier, but just to make sure that registrars can compete with one another and that registrants have choices and options that they can exercise. But it is kind of a complicated process. It has a lot of acronyms because it's part of ICANN, so of course it does. And feel free to reach out to you know, the dirty businessmen on these groups if you need help, because I think that we're more than willing to spend some time and help clarify some of these issues, and also possibly give you a little bit of insight into how some other registrars. Let's go ahead and say the ones that don't come to ICANN meetings and don't show up on these calls, but they're out there, and they do, want to say, get creative with the policy, play games with the policy. How do we want to, whatever diplomatic way we can say is that they kind of it can get a little interesting when we try to dispute whether or not something was an authorized transfer or not. So that's kind of where we have here. And Aubrey, I'm reading your chat here. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but is there something that, did I leave something out or?
It's just saying about asking people on the list, people asking questions.
Not at all. What I was just basically saying in the middle of the conversation is ask on the list, because there's bound to be somebody else on the question that has the same question. That's all I was saying. No, didn't leave anything out. I thought it was great. Thanks.
Okay, good. Good point, too, is that if someone asks a question, and I think Phil had a question earlier, did we cover your question on the reasons for denial, Phil? I keep typing here. Yep. Okay, good. Okay, McKelly, is that a new hand or?
That's an old one. Ignore it.
Old one. Okay.
I mean, unless you just want to just keep saying how wonderful you are, so I can keep doing that.
No. I think we can wrap up a few minutes early here. I just wanted to make sure that there weren't any loose threads here, and that everyone who had questions got them answered. We will set this recording, this MP3, this little cartoon of the slideshow, we'll put that up onto the list, and I assume that means it hits the wiki somewhere, although to be completely honest, I haven't navigated that thing very well yet. So all these materials will be available if anyone wants to discuss or if someone feels they might have some benefit to our future conversations. So thanks for the extra hour, everyone. Certainly appreciate the time. And we'll go ahead and close the call.
Thanks very much, James.